Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. This week, we bring you a special edition from Denmark's second city, Aarhus.
Obviously, I do believe in architecture as high art, where you've got high quality design. But if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Join us as we report from this year's Congress of the Academy of Urbanism, where experts, practitioners and city lovers gathered to discuss everything from participatory architecture to fixing your waterfront. Plus, we sit down with Jan Gehl on the day of his 81st birthday to reflect on what comes next for urbanism.
Being sweet to people is the cheapest thing you can do in a city, and that is what we have overlooked for such a long time and is now really sought after. And some cities are well ahead in answering that question.
That's all coming up in the next 30 minutes on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. On the east coast of the Jutland Peninsula, you'll find the city of Aarhus, with just more than 320,000 inhabitants. When walking around its streets, it's immediately striking how young and how educated its population seems to be. You'll hear English spoken on every corner and crossroads, and a high percentage of its population are students at the city's university. As Denmark's main port, the city's culture and heritage has been heavily connected to its relationship with the water since it was founded. After years as a key industrial city, many factories closed down and the port area was left to rot. Well, not quite rot, but it certainly wasn't the hive of activity anymore. But now, under a new vision and leadership, the city has completely transformed its harbours with an imposing new library perched on the waterfront, recreational areas, restaurants, shops, and also the famous Iceberg housing development. This year, Aarhus is the European Capital of Culture too, and for our friends at the Academy of Urbanism, it seemed like the ideal time to finally see these changes firsthand. Over the course of 4 days, more than 120 urbanists came to Aarhus, touring the city and its surrounding areas, examining everything from architecture and design to infrastructure and retail, even startup incubators and the odd cultural venue too. To paint us a snapshot of how Aarhus has evolved, I spoke with the city's architect, Stephen Willacy, after a tour of the City Hall. He told me all about his people-first approach to urbanism.
A lot's happened in the last 10 years. Probably 15. If people came here for 10 years ago, they wouldn't recognise what's happened. But we've sort of, I think we know it's something's going on, which is very good. Something's coming through. And I think now that because of the European Capital of Culture, people are waking up and seeing what we're doing. On that basis, it's not a secret anymore. Now it's leaking out all over the place and people are finding out. It's a very interesting city to visit in terms of urbanism. We've got so many different projects going on around, not least our harbour front and the urban development in the harbour area, but also there's this whole idea of engagement with citizens and trying to get them involved in the project work. This is also another grain of urbanism which we're focusing a lot on now.
All cities are trying to move people from car to bicycle and to walking and to reconnect with the water and to upgrade the quality of public housing. But here you've achieved it. Now, I wonder why it's been a little bit more successful here than in other cities, even maybe in Denmark. Is it because of the council? Is it because of Danes' kind of social democratic version of the world? Is there something very peculiar about Denmark that's allowed you to make these changes, as you say, in quite quick succession?
Well, I often frame it in such a way that with urban governance of the city, we have 31 councillors and they're very young. And they also, when we do these larger projects we're working with, it's a kind of a consensus. Nearly all the parties are agreeing on these projects. So they've been building on the shoulders of each term, every 4 years. And that's had a sense of continuity, which means there's a buy-in all the way through. And we make a new comprehensive plan every 4 years, which is linked into the city vision. And we're developing, for example, the idea of urban growth so that we're catering for the influx of 5,000 new citizens each year. But there are conflicts in terms of infrastructure, I have to say. But cyclism, for example, is one of the ones which we've been focusing a lot on. compared to the rest of Denmark, we've actually got a 20% increase in cyclism over the last period of time. So our streets are getting crowded with bikes. So that's creating a positive problem, this culture of cyclism. Similarly, I think also people are sort of kind of understand the idea of a good life. And they understand that, you know, standing in a queue in your car for too long in the morning or in the evening or going home, we're encouraging park and ride also for cyclists, where we have modules and car parking areas on the outskirts of the city. People are cycling to work so they can avoid that rush and they're getting fit. You know, we have a big hospital on the outside of town and people are driving from many parts of the region. I know many nurses, this has been monitored, doing their cycling activities, a kind of a daily exercise. So the whole health and well-being thing is being taken on board, also in our infrastructure and mobility plan, which is quite fun to think of, actually. So there's a kind of a general buy-in to it.
We were struck that even today, walking here to the venue, that we joked how many people are accidentally getting fit just going to work. But for the City Council, of course, you know, as outsiders, it's easy to focus on the beautiful project, the beautiful intervention, the nice piece of architecture. But the driving forces are things like health and inclusion and making sure that new arrivals feel part of the city. Is all this urbanism, has it got a bigger ambition than just looking nice, as it were?
Looking nice is an add-on. It's very nice for me as a city architect. We talk about architectural quality in the architecture, but it's also about the kind of way of life in the urban realm, which is also becoming more and more a focus. For many years, we had kind of an idea that you design a building and some space left over after planning slope. Now it's turned around, and we're using the theories and philosophies of Jan Gehl and other urbanists about when we have a development, we say to people, what sort of life are you going to try and create here? And then what type of space do you want to make? And then you can design your building. And then we say, you know, what is your building actually giving back to the society? What difference are you making? So we're trying to make that. It's a paradigm change, I have to say. It's not been easy, but we're getting there the last 4 years.
One of the things you spoke yesterday in the introduction to this great weekend is you said that there's also a question being debated about if you improve an area and the people around it suddenly have an uptick in the value of their property, should they be obliged to give something back to the city? Now, that's, I can't imagine a conversation you'd get going in London very easily. But is that a conversation that's genuinely happening here now?
Where we're talking about areas where we're increasing density, obviously, if you're an owner of a site or a developer wants to make a development here, we can see an increase in value because of our planning strategy. So we're talking about, what about giving something back in the urban realm? Or it could be something in terms of a play area. Or it could be donating some money towards a library or something like this. This is something we're starting to discuss. And it's with inspiration from North America, from Canada and other countries. So it's early days. We're also, you know, lighting on a cycle path next to an office building which is going to be built, creating security for people biking in the winter months. So it does cause a stir, but we think that the developers, they'll have greater success if they're actually giving something back too. So we see it as a win-win situation. They're going to make money and they're going to give something back as well.
I also want to ask you about another interesting tension. You know, you're the city architect, and one of your jobs is to look after your base, City Hall, one of the greatest modernist buildings known by Arne Jacobsen, an incredible piece of total design and a piece where, you know, two men came up with a vision and kind of delivered it to a city. Yeah. Now, all the talk we're hearing today is about, you know, that could never happen. You shouldn't have top-down solutions. The architect shouldn't be telling the city what it needs. And it should be bottom-up. But do you sometimes find that tension sitting in this building where actually two or three people said, okay, this is the solution, and you ended up with something extraordinary, where potentially sometimes with participatory urbanism, you end up with something which can look like a bit of a mishmash of ambition?
That's a real dilemma, and it's something I find very fascinating, because obviously I do believe in architecture as high art, where you've got high quality design, but if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So I think the idea of getting the actual use and the functionality in the building and the way it works is important in terms of using the building, but also in the local society. But this is where I come in, I think, as a kind of a bridge builder, because I do believe architects are very clever at manipulating or discussing all these often very difficult, could be a bag of balls where you're shaking the bag, and all these complex issues need to be crystallized into some kind of form. And I think this is where architects are really good, because they're taught in the way they work with projects to work with complexities which are often contrasting and going in different directions. And sometimes maybe not everything is satisfied in the final design, but you've got a much better solution. I sometimes say it's not because I have disrespect for our engineer colleagues, but they're very specialised in certain fields. I think also architects also have to be able to, in a general way of thinking, understand all these different multidisciplinary approaches. Someone has to bring it together, and I think that's where architects have a role to play. And I think it's a positive role to that discussion.
Another thing that really struck me, you know, there's a little bit of graffiti here, and I'm sure that there are some people who occasionally steal a bicycle. But on the whole, when you walk around, bicycles not locked up, public buildings very well looked after. We went to the new library down at the dock yesterday, and you walk in and there's tons of young people just working away at the end of their school day in a respectful way with the building. Again, is that a Danish thing? Is that a small town thing? There seems to be something that you can have in your social planning here, which is an element of trust of people, which would be lacking in bigger cities. In very few places have I been asked to kind of click in or go and see a security guard.
I think the word trust is probably fundamental to most of the things we're working with in the welfare society in Denmark. It's a kind of a cornerstone. I've read the book by Benjamin Barber, by If Mayors Rule the World, where he talks about this thing about trust. Generally, in Scandinavian countries, people trust their national government, like over 85%. In other countries, it's much lower. And when you think about the way of working with your local communities, there's a much stronger sense of community and trustworthiness amongst the different people. I do believe that trust is an important factor. The other thing is, it's the idea of making good quality. People, when you see something which is well designed, well made, and going to last, people are respectful of that. And I think that could be used many different parts of the world. But I know we're challenged in many different districts. I've also worked where there's a lot of vandalism and in deprived neighbourhoods and things like this. So I know there's social issues to be addressed here as well, in terms of trying to avoid graffiti or security. But security now has also become, you'll see bollards on our streets now, which we didn't have until recently, because of the risk factor when we have festivals and things like this. So in some ways, some of these unpleasant things are maybe here to stay. But if we design them nicely and make them integrated into the urban realm, perhaps we can make them into a positive gesture, perhaps make them into urban furnitures and make some fun out of them. Rather than being a hostile thing, maybe it could become something friendly. So there's another qualitative aspect to it.
And lastly, the next stage is for Aarhus, what will happen next? Perhaps as a footnote to that, if you become too good and too successful at your job, surely you'll be running into dealing with even more people wanting to live here, even more arrivals in the city.
I said the other day that the next 10 years is Aarhus. And this is really based on the fact that the European Capital of Culture is here this year. And we can see from other cities how the snowballing effect is. Lots of people coming here. We have very nice recreative and amenity spaces, and we have fantastic cultural facilities. In a way, we have facilities and amenities for 1 million people, and we're only 330,000. By 2050, we'll be 450. So we're designing our cities for that type of growth. We're taking it on board because it's an attractive place to come, and we know that people are interested in a city like Aarhus. Even though we're a second city, we think, because we're a regional city, it's an important driver for the national economy. So we're embracing this positive challenge. It's something I'm very proud to be a part of.
That was British-born Stephen Willacy, who, after marrying a Dane, ended up as the city architect for Aarhus. Now, we all know about New York's High Line or Seoul's new addition, Solo. Well, refurbished elevated walkways are very trendy at the moment. And Aarhus, well, is no exception. But in the case of this Danish city, it's about much more than trying to refurbish an old coal bridge. Martin Timm is the founder of Kulbrøn, or Coal Bridge, the project trying to use these 160 metres of track to bring actual change to the South Harbour, that's home to the city's former gas plant, but also many communities who live on the periphery of the city in more ways than one. Martin explained it all and even took us on a tour of the coal bridge.
Martin, we're standing next to this old coal bridge that you want to turn into a kind of equivalent of the High Line for Aarhus. Tell us what exactly it is and what your dream is.
Well, my dream is that we can take this old concrete monument that haven't been active since the 60s, actually, that's just been standing here, and that would probably have ended up as roadfill if no one would see the beauty of it. So the dream is that we'll create a connection to the city that is just right next to us, actually. So it's very central in that way, so we can connect the harbour and the city in a new way down here at the South Harbour and create a pulsating new business area where the culture and the entrepreneurship and the social kind of aspects will thrive as well.
Now, when I look around, I can see still lots of old industrial machinery, holes being dug, building work going on, but there is a pop-up food stands, there's warehouses that's still not quite being fully utilised. As you begin to build that bridge, I guess you're concerned that it doesn't just become another hipster neighbourhood or another yuppie neighbourhood. How are you going to make sure that this is something for the community and for the people who already live here?
That's one very important question, actually. How do you kind of maintain that qualities of the area now, also in the future, and for the people that lives here? And I think we'll just have to be very stubborn about always keeping track of what's the vision for this area as we develop it, because huge developers will come into this area, definitely. So we'll have to keep an eye on the vision for the South Harbour, and I hope that with the coal bridge being the first project, we can always kind of point at that and say, you're going to build into this.
Aarhus is having an amazing moment in the sun. Lots of people coming here to see how the city is changing. Why do you think that the city has got so much right at the moment?
I think it's a lot of factors. Globally, you can see that cities are growing. But I think that Aarhus, at a very early point in the development, started looking into how we're going to develop. If you just look at how we built here 10 years ago, it was very traditional. Now it's a lot more about, you know, find the DNA for the different areas and involving people early on to what kind of area this should be. And it's going on all over the city. So there's a lot of involvement, I think, and a lot of people in Aarhus feel that they are part of this development we're going through.
Now, we spoke this afternoon on a panel. You were there talking about a new kind of activism. And I guess at the heart of it is this notion that cities can't be so top-down anymore. They need to make sure that citizens get involved. Now, in this neighbourhood, there's even some shelters for the homeless, and even those people you're trying to bring into the process a little bit. Could you just tell us about that?
I think it's very important that we look at it in a broad sense, and that we also, you know, in an area like this, we have drug addicts, we have alcoholics, we have people with mental issues and so on that are struggling with their lives in different ways. And it's important that we can develop with them as well. So, as you say, when Aarhus develops as it does and everyone is feeling this in a very positive and dynamic way, that should also be the case for those kind of in the lower regions of society. So a project like the coal bridge should also mean that these people get better access to the areas.
And finally, tell us, you're going to be running a huge conference in the city about creativity. Is that because, again, it's tapping into this feeling that in Aarhus there's a great university, there's new technology companies, there's an incredible young startup scene? Are you trying to crystallise that in some kind of physical way that you bring everybody together to talk about this special moment for the city?
Absolutely. I think it's very important that, as you say, this is a student city. There's a lot of knowledge here. There's a lot of new companies. There's a lot of entrepreneurship. There's a lot of new companies moving to the city. And we want to definitely showcase that and make sure that we don't, you know, create silos. So people are just sitting in their silo and not, you know, looking out internationally and looking to each other. So we need to combine the forces to also make the next step for the city.
And when will be the first time that we see that bridge planted out and people, well, there's people can get up there and have a look already, but when's the first time it's going to be properly used, do you think?
I would say in the beginning, mid-2019.
That was Martin Timm, the founder of Coolbrun. And finally on today's show, a man who almost doesn't need an introduction, the Danish architect and urban visionary Jan Gehl. He travelled from his home city of Copenhagen to Aarhus on the last day of the Congress for a wrap-up session on what the way forward is for urbanism. It also happened to be his 81st birthday, and after the debate, we caught up with him.
I've worked with research and with communication and with preaching for cities for 50 years, and I really feel that after year 2000, there's been a change in the direction of the wind, that some of the old vices of the 20th century is being left behind us. All this celebration of modernism and of motorism, many more people are questioning this, and it's distinctly possible to see now that one city after the other starts on a new agenda of making it more people-friendly. Also, many of them are introducing bicycles and doing more for public transportation, and also doing various things to subdue the limitless use of motor cars. So after 2000, I really see a change in paradigm for city planning. Also, we have, besides this about having a more livable, better quality of life, we have two other big drivers now. One is that we have to make the cities respond to the climate challenge, and we also have to respond to the sitting syndrome. We've built cities for 50 years. We invited everybody to sit from morning till night, and now the doctors all over the world realize that that was not so smart, and now the World Health Organization are urging all the cities in the world to make sure that people walk and bike as much as possible in their daily day doings. So that's a new driver. And all of this points to the fact that if you do more of the basics, first things first, do more people-oriented planning and make sure that people can use their cities as persons, as homo sapiens, walking and bicycles, you're getting a more livable, a more sustainable, and a much more healthy population.
Are you a little surprised that that culture has spread so wide? You were talking here today about New York, but even Moscow, a city that many people may not think of as an urban leader, getting behind it, embracing this new sense that something has to change about our relationship with the car, our relationship with mobility, the density of the city, they all need to be shift.
Yeah, I can see it all over the place, from Greenland to also in a number of Arab cultures I've been working. They were even so honest to say that we want to be different, very different from Dubai, which I think is more or less a catastrophe or misplaced attempt to do something which is actually 100% modernism and motorism. And some of the other Arab nations are really doing something else. So we can see this questioning of the way we built cities in the 20th century popping up more and more. And I put down 2000 as really the time when we started in earnest to see this change of direction of the wind.
Tell me finally, what do you see as the biggest hurdles to getting that done? Is it city governments sometimes don't get it? Is it a lack of money? Why do some cities move ahead so quickly and other cities really struggle to embrace a new model for their environment?
I think that, of course, the economic structure in many countries are such that the more automobiles you can sell, the better for the economy, and the more real estate profits you can generate by your policy, the better for the real estate industry. So there is certainly in many places a great resistance from the economic world and the powers to be. But it is a fact that this kind of more people-friendly city can be done with much less investment than the previous city, where this infrastructure for automobiles has been extremely expensive. And that's also why I think that this more people-oriented city planning really would be a great thing to be used in the developing countries, because it's much, much cheaper. It makes the people with less means much more mobile, and that means that they can go around in the city, they can get work, they don't have to spend so much time in congestion, and That is a strategy which, say, has been picked up by Enrique Peñalosa in Bogota, who said, let's invest in the 80% who have no motor car instead of invest in the 20% who has a motor car, because in the long run that will give them a much better economy and better families and fewer problems. So that was his strategy. He's back as mayor now. It will be interesting to see what will be the next step. But anyway, I think that being sweet to people is the cheapest thing you can do in a city. And that is what we have overlooked for such a long time and is now really sought after. And some cities are well ahead in answering that question and being very sweet to people. I come myself from Copenhagen. I've lived there my whole life. I've been married for 56 years now. And I've had the fantastic chance to live in a city where every morning my wife and I has woken up. We knew that the city would undoubtedly be a little bit better than yesterday. We've seen so many improvements happening in all these years, and living in a city which gets better every day is a fantastic thing. I know of many, many cities where you wake up in the morning and you know for sure it's a little bit not so good as it was yesterday. And that is, of course, what we will have to change so that that positive circle would be eventually a worldwide experience.
That's all we have for this week's episode of The Urbanist. The show was produced by Carlotta Rabello and it was edited by David Stevens. You can tune in on Monday when a brand new edition of Tall Stories will be out. And also remember to subscribe to ensure that you don't miss out on any new episodes. To play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, here are Aarhus's very own Una Buiden, which means under the city, with Yerba.